Bibi Does Soho. With Bibi Lynch.
Hello everyone, what a beautiful day. It's as beautiful dash hideous as that traumatic Oscars mix up with Moonlight. Oh, it's Bruce Willis, I feel sorry for. Hey, I'm Bibi Lynch and you're listening. No one in the studio gets that. Do you know why? Because they're all 12. I'm Bibi Lynch and you're listening to Bibi Does Soho on your fantastic Soho radio. I'm all yours for the next 2 hours. Shall we do it? Bibi Lynch, and that was Whitney Houston, Million Dollar Bill. Oh, Whitney. Whitney's dead. Don't be dead. Hey, how are you? What's been happening to me? I'm alive. I'm staying by the seaside. Hey, Ellie, are you on mic?
Hello.
Hello. I'm by the seaside.
Ooh.
Yeah, I've had another torturous housing situation. And I'm staying with my lovely niece, Billy. And I really love Billy, except she calls me Uncle Bibi.
Worrying.
That's really cruel, isn't it? Do you have nieces, nephews?
No, because I'm the oldest of three siblings. My younger sister is 7.
Oh, okay.
So no kids
and now
yet.
I feel like that was an inappropriate question. Anyway, let's carry on. Let's carry on. Carry on. Let me tell you about today's show. My first guest is writer and performance poet Conrad Gamble. Conrad will be telling us about his amazing new book, For the Love of London, and all about his Soho. And it is amazing. And also, I'm in it. So just a little even more amazing. And in the second hour, we'll be joined by novelist Matthew Blackstad. Matthew's debut novel, Sock Puppet, is all about politics and people being vile to each other online right up our Strasse Soho. So stay tuned and please join in. We would love to hear from you. Tweet at Soho Radio and at BB Lynch. Tweet and say hello. Or tweet just to say something really, really rude to me. Because, you know,
I like that.
Catholic, it would make my day.
Song that we love to sing. Every time we hear the music and feel in this love together, we got the kind that lasts forever.
This is BB Does Soho and Soho Radio, sohoradiolondon.com. And we have an app, go to the App Store and search for Soho Radio London. And that was We're In This Love Together by the brilliant Al Jarreau. My husband, and I shouldn't say this on air because he's not my husband, Ian Shaw, took me to see Al Jarreau at Ronnie Scott's once. It was one of the best nights ever. He's amazing. I know you might think it's Kathy Beale talking, but I'm, A, hungover, and B, still drunk, I think. And my voice has dropped a couple of octaves, but I kind of think it's good, Ellie. Do you think? Sexy? So producer Nick's not here. He's back in rehab, and He's Nicholas. Nicholas. No, producer Nick's gone away. No, he's not in rehab. But hello, Nick. We love you. We miss you. And actually, when you come back, you're in trouble. And I'll tell you for why. Producer Ellie told me what you whispered to her when you left the studio last time. And that makes you a deviant young man. Right. Anyway, guess what? Our first guest is here. Conrad Gamble is a writer and performance poet. He's been commissioned to write poetry for The Book of Everyone, Suitcase Magazine, and many more titles. He's performed at Secret Cinema. Oh, how drunk. Do you know why I'm drunk? It's because of Conrad, because I went to his launch last night and he gave me fizzy grapefruit stuff with gin, and I can hardly talk, but it was amazing. He's performed at Secret Cinema and numerous festivals. He curates Ear Smoke, a monthly poetry night in locations across London. And alongside his poetry and screenplays, Conrad's non-fiction book, For the Love of London, is out this month, and he's here to tell us all about it. First of all, Conrad Gamble, congratulations on your name.
Thank you.
It's a brilliant name. Where's that from?
It's a weird relationship one has with one's own name, because you don't bestow it upon yourself.
Yeah.
It's not like saying, hey, look at me. It's like, you're just like, oh, thanks, parents.
But are you happy with it?
Yeah.
Did you at any stage not like it?
No, what's weird, my friends and family, my mum calls me Rad, but you can't introduce yourself as Rad.
Hey, I'm Rad.
Like, hey, I'm Rad. It's like, no, you're a dick. It's like, have you met my brother, Cowbunga? No, like, obviously... Obviously, you can't open with that, but I do like the fact that
you've totally
the case.
Got to promise me that you will open with that at least once in your life. I'm because I'm called BB Comedy, BB Bernadette. It gets worse, doesn't it? And I hated my name so much when I was a kid. I would only answer to Michelle for a year,
which is my mother's name.
No way.
Yes.
Oh
yeah.
My God, I love how life. I love how that happens. Just all came together. Conrad, talking of brilliant names as well. Before we talk about the book, Ear Smoke. I love that. That's so evocative.
Yeah, it's from one of the poems I do. I was in a loo, and there's a girl I used to see, and I heard the speakers singing, and I was like, oh, I know that voice. And it was the girl I used to see, and it was just...
It was her singing?
It was her singing, I just, for this event or whatever, and it sounded like Ear Smoke.
So really, tell me what happens at Ear Smoke. So these are events you put on across London.
Yeah, so we do one in Longport in Hackney Downs. We do one in Chelsea, and I want to do it more across town. And we just get poets, well, about four or five poets, and a musician, and yeah.
And have a nice night.
Yeah.
How is the London poetry scene?
I think it grows more and more, but like I'm more and more aware of it because I'm more involved.
Yeah.
But supposedly it's growing more and more, and... You know, especially with spoken word, it's you know, it's there's a lot of people doing it, and especially with people like there's a guy who performed at my last place, James Messiah, Kate Tempest. I mean, people talk about Kate Tempest, you know, not just now but for a long time. You know,
Tempest and Messiah.
Yeah.
Rad, Tempest and Messiah. You could be the new Mary Mungo Midge. This is very impressive. Do you know how the world's like imploding? You know, everything's kind of gone to shit. Does that inspire you, or does it? So have you written about that, or does it make you feel?
Eddie Izzard does a funny thing about how Switzerland for 2,000 years has not had any wars or any problems, and what have they got? Toe bones and cuckoo clocks. But in France and Italy, they've had wars for 1,000 years, and out of that has come the Renaissance, etc. You know, out friction comes spark. So yeah, like
bad times
do make people like think about stuff.
Yeah, I love that. Say it again, out of friction comes smart. Right, I'm writing that down. So let's talk about For the Love of London. So I love this strap line. So it is, what makes London great by the people who make it great. And that pretty much sums up the premise, doesn't it?
100%. I mean, there's the criteria of what I want people to be is like, care about what you do and care about where you live. You know, and there's some well-known names in there, but they're well-known because they're good at what they do.
Yeah.
And they care about where they live. And yeah, there's a lot of people that one could have chosen from. But
so how did you decide who to choose? How did that happen?
Well, I tried to look for a whole range, and it bummed me out for a while near the end, thinking like I haven't got everyone, but you can't, you know. It's
yeah. So, and it's like a range of, well, this I'm taking this straight from the sleeve notes, range of vignettes that capture the eccentricity, authenticity and true originality of London, with some gorgeous photographs by the lovely Tony Briggs and Andy Donohoe.
Yes, yeah. And a few other photographers, but both Andy and Tony, who you know, yeah, a lot of fun to work with them. Good souls, having a nice time.
Yeah. So we'll talk about a few of the people in the book. So you've got Norman Jay talking about Notting Hill Carnival. So that's what he's chosen that represents London to him, the glory of London to him. Sir Paul Smith talking about London above eye level. Tell me more about that. What was he saying?
So it's just the idea that, you know, like we all, you know, you can go on a tourist bus or you can not go on one in other cities because you think it might be uncool or whatever, but you get on a tourist bus and actually a bit above what you normally see, there's amazing stuff to
always
see.
Always look up.
Yeah, and he just, yeah, I was talking to my friend the other day, said, if you've got a depressed friend, buy him shit shoes. He doesn't look down, he looks up. He looks up in the world and he's happy. And kind of what he's getting at, maybe.
So, can we just do a shout out for some shit shoes for Bieber? I'd like some shit shoes, size 6. I've got really big feet for my height. And Stephen Fry talking about London like the English language. What does he mean?
I mean, well, so in he uses the reference with Paris and the French language. I didn't know this, but apparently the French, they said you couldn't use certain words. And in the same way, in Paris, they've tried to sort of have more segregation. London and New York are two of the only cities in the world that have social housing intermixed with rich areas. It's just a sort of amalgamation of more and more things.
And that feeds the language.
Yeah, and in the same way with English, it grows and grows. You can't stop it.
Yeah. I still think it's amazing, even in London, language and accents, that there are different accents even within London. It's so brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's not just accents. I mean, there's 300 different languages. It's like there's more different tongues than anywhere in the world.
Are you from London?
I was born in Shepherd's Bush. My mum had a gallery in Russell Square.
Michelle.
Thank God for her. Yeah, and I've lived all over town.
Yeah.
At various points.
But you love London.
Yeah, I mean, it gets to you, you know, and it's nice.
She can be a bitch.
Yeah, and it's nice to get away in order to remember what you love about it when you come back. But it's, you know, I talk to people having done the book, and people, when I say it's like one of the most tolerant places on earth, people are surprised by that. But it
totally
genuinely
is.
It really is. And there's a reason we put up with this grave.
Yeah. What made you come up with the idea for the book?
So my father died a few years ago, and I needed to get out, I needed to go somewhere else. And I moved to Barcelona for a bit, and it's a lovely place. But when I came back to London, I was like, there's something about this place, and I need to celebrate it, and this is how I decided to do that.
I love that. I think that's a really beautiful reason. You're exactly right. As soon as you leave it, you come back, and if you see it with new eyes, if you see it with tourist eyes, we should totally do it. Let's have a Soho Radio Beano. Does anyone use the word Beano anymore? I've just used it. Around London on a tourist bus. That would be incredible. You know there's a tourist bus that does cream teas? There's an afternoon school tourist, but yeah, I know, we'll do that. You've also got Dame Zaha Hadid talking about London's unique potential. I love that.
Yeah, I was surprised, you know, she was a very in-demand, busy lady when I asked her to do the interview or the submission. And I was lucky enough for her to respond.
Yeah.
And yeah, she's written a lovely piece.
Yeah. Yeah, how did you approach people?
Some I knew, some I knew through other people, some I just walked up to and said hi.
You look interesting, let me do it. So I'm in it, producer Ellie, and I've written about Bar Bruno, our gorgeous Bar Bruno, where producer Nick and I go and have chips after we do the show on the corner of Wardour. Yeah, you know some of the places that you're featuring, will they get to see that they're in the book? Because that would be really lovely, wouldn't it?
I hope so.
Yeah, we should kind of. I'm going to take my name and get them to sign it. You must have discovered some incredible new to you places and ideas about London through this book.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. What's the one that? The one that I really enjoyed knowing more through just I already knew about, but the way Bobby Kasanga is a guy called. It's a guy called Bobby who set up Hackney Wick Football Club. The way he writes about Hackney Marshes.
He chose Hackney Marshes, it's brilliant.
But the way he says it, it makes it look in new light to me. So yeah, there's certain places I kind of knew, but seeing it from other people's perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the most surprising place then? Was it Hackney Marshes? Or the most surprising submission?
Surprising. I don't think any of that's surprising, to be honest. But the one that I enjoyed most was Martine Wright. She was in the Aldgate 77 tube bombing, and she lost the use of her legs. And she's Bo Bell Cockney, and then 5 years later, she was representing GB in the Paralympics at the Games in London. And that's not just surprising. It was more surprising the way she'd written about her, how it was not a positive, not the most positive thing that's ever happened to her, but how she viewed it and how she made it the most positive thing.
And still loving London,
yeah,
despite that happening to her in London, yeah, but then representing in London. Yeah, exactly. Amazing. You're not in the book.
I write the beginning bit, and you know, hopefully at some point in the future someone will ask me to be in a book like this. And I've enjoyed the curation of it, but it's not about me. It's about London and the people who make it great. And you know, it's nice to meet all these people, but you know.
What would you have chosen, or where would you have chosen? Is that a piece of string question?
Where would I have chosen? In my introduction, I talk about when my mum and dad had a gallery in Russell Square. My dad used to take me to this Greasy Spoon. And that's where I first loved London, listening to the couriers and the suits and the hard hats just talking this various patter. You know, I've never forgotten that kind of buzz. So I do kind of talk about it in the introduction, but that's probably where I talk about it.
That's what I love about Bar Bruno. Bar Bruno's got such a kind of Soho mix in there. So it's workmen, it's some, you know, playwright talking about whatever, and it, none of it matters because we're all bonding over the baked potatoes the size of your head. Honestly, the food is so huge. It's amazing and huge. And there's a brilliant waitress there who calls. I thought she was just calling me Bella, and I felt quite flattered. And then I've heard her say it to pretty much everyone there. She's just an old flirt. I love her. She's not old at all, but she's lovely. So For the Love of London is out March 9th.
Yeah.
Published by Cassell and Octopus. And for updates, go to for-the-love.com. Have I got the address right?
Correct. Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay. So producer Nick is, and you must get the book. It's really beautifully put together, and the photos are amazing, and the stories are lovely. And it is, and I think it's a book for Londoners to discover more about this amazing city, but also for people who maybe just don't get it, you know, that's patronising, so you wouldn't just not get a city, but, you know, just to maybe show you that London isn't just Westminster and the London-centric decisions that seem to turn the country against London and Londoners. There's a whole city here. Here's something I'm going to say. I think there's a real prejudice against Londoners being proud of London. I think, you know, Scousers are allowed to be proud of Liverpool. Manx are allowed to be proud of Manchester. Geordies of Newcastle. And there's something, though, about, I think London's an easy target. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, but you can be a Scouser and a Londoner. You can be a wherever and a Londoner, you know. And there can be, people love where they're from so much. And yes, maybe people can judge you for being a Londoner for X, Y, and Z reason. And if you come to London, you're spending £7 on a coffee, then, like, why would it not piss you off? Mm. And like, there's an understandable reason, because people don't enjoy.
But that's the place, not the people.
Right, right. It's a situation, not disposition. And people, I can understand why people might think that, but
give us a chance.
Yeah.
Give us a chance, world. You'll love us. Conrad's book, For the Love of London, is out on March 9th. And we've also got Conrad here. Are you going to... Oh, hang on, sorry. I'll tell you what. Can we play? Mm-hmm. Bung on a little song. Do what you want to do.
How about the first song you picked?
Yeah, go on. This is Soho. This is a...
Tell the little things you say and do. Make me want to be with you. I love you.
such short songs, that Buddy Holly. Why couldn't he give us a 3-minute song? How long was that exactly? How long was it? I said that was 2:22. 2:23.
No,
was it 2:22? Yeah. Are you joking? Are you lying?
No, I'm not.
God, I'm good at this. You know, I do time tweets on Twitter. Oh, can you please let Luke in? It's so sorry for all the stop starts today, everyone. It's we've got a whole brand new Soho Radio and a whole new setup here, and lovely Luke's just got us water. Thanks, Luke.
Thank you, Luke.
Gin would be nice. Conrad's got his water. Producer Ellie's got nothing. Luke's got a nice shirt. That's nice. How are you enjoying it, Luke, so far? Good. It's good. It's good. So look, that was Buddy Holly and Rayvon, and we're gonna. So Conrad's here to talk about his Soho, of course, and because producer Nick's not here, we're not going to play the jingle that I mean, I kind of abuse him about it, don't I? Every show, and I kind of, you know, it took him months to come up with something that. Well, he's got a dog, and to be honest, I think the dog did it. You know, in about a minute. So, you know, God bless Nick. But we get our guests to choose Soho songs that hold Soho memories to them, as well as answer some Soho questions. And why did you choose the Buddy Holly track?
I was obsessed with Buddy Holly when I was about 7. Yeah, and my dad and my mum took me to Ed's Easy Diner at the end of Old Compton Street. I remember having a burger and then going to the Buddy Holly show. Yes. And I remember like getting up and dancing in the aisles, and I've like never really stopped dancing. And like, yeah.
Was that when you started? That's when you fell in love with him.
Yeah, well, no, I'd loved him before, and then they took me to the show, and then I just remember getting up and dancing in the aisles. Mum being like, "Here you go."
That's so mad. So why Buddy Holly, not Elvis, for instance?
I mean, it's a good question. I wasn't sort of too aware of stuff when I was 7. I just loved it.
You just loved it?
Just loved it, yeah.
Oh, how old are you?
33.
Are you? There used to be a show, so you won't remember it, called Oh Boy. Have I just made that up? Google it. And I think I was about 10 or 11, and it was kind of like, you know, rock and roll stuff. And so I used to go to my friend Julia Dorrington's, we'd have custard creams and watch Oh Boy.
Oh Boy's a Buddy Holly song, right?
Yeah, and it was like a TV show, but I'm not sure if it was an English one, so I think it was English people trying to jive. It wasn't pretty, Conrad. Before you ever came to Soho, what did the name Soho mean to you?
After that story, I mean, I don't really remember Soho before not knowing it, so I think it's always meant the same kind of feeling to me.
It's weird because when I ask people that question, and some people say, oh, you know, I came when I was 14, it's like, I'm the same as you. I don't not remember it. Mm. So I don't remember being excited about coming here and being shocked or, you know, whatever. I kind of was just here. What does Soho mean to you now?
I mean, it's the most creative square mile in the world. And it means seeing the centre of the city I love. It seems to me like tolerance and creativity, and it means having a laugh, and it means just seeing things that I might not see or I want to see.
Yeah. Do you think it's changing? Oh, it's obviously changing. Is it changing okay in your eyes? Is it an acceptable?
I mean, like
development.
You know, I don't want to be overly conservative about it and not want change. Like, change is a good thing, but yeah, it's definitely not changing. Certain things aren't positive about this change.
Mm. There was somewhere else. So this is. I like to start an anecdote and not be able to end it. But someone told me the other day of another Soho place that's shutting down. I'll try and remember it when we play a track. And again, it was like, you know, the added depression to that on top of Stockpot and, you know, wherever else. What's your favourite Soho bar, restaurant or venue?
Kettner's. My dad took me there when I was 19. Don't go back, but it reminds me of a nice time.
Did you go to the champagne bar?
Yeah, Ayala. They serve Ayala, which is supposedly Oscar Wilde's favourite champagne. And I remember that, and I remember my dad being sort of really enjoying telling me that idea. And I've never really forgotten that lunch.
And they have the Marie Antoinette glasses there as well, don't they?
Yeah, those. Yeah.
Yeah. Shape her boobs. Lucky Marie Antoinette. Did you ever go to the room upstairs called the apartment? I'm not sure if it is called the apartment. I've decided it's called the apartment. And it's just this crazy room, like really deep colours. And there's like a gramophone, like a proper old school gramophone, a little mini bar. It's just like a little opium den. I don't even know what it's for. I don't know if it's a private room. I don't know how I got in there. They let me in. What do you think is the most interesting place in Soho?
The threshold of just whether it's Charing Cross Road or Oxford Street, anywhere, as you just walk into
That's
Soho,
brilliant.
It just changes your sensibility. You just feel a bit different as you walk into it. So anywhere you walk in, you just have that feeling where you're suddenly like, I'm here, and your mindset changes.
That's such a brilliant answer, and it's totally true, isn't it? What is that? How can is it about ley lines? How can a place have different energy? I mean, I'm asking you like you know. Who would know? But there is a different, tangible...
Yeah, for sure.
I love that. Who is your favourite Soho character?
My grandfather.
Oh, you're so close to your family.
Yeah, it's he was a Shakespearean actor, and he's sort of frequented these parts for a long time, and it's sort of nice to walk around and just think that he was stumbling around too.
What was his name?
He still is around. He's Michael Bynes.
And is he acting?
He's... the last job he did was about a year... I mean, he's 93, so yeah. Not so much. He does when he can, but rarely.
Yeah. Do you do that?
No, I come from a family of actors, and, you know, I think we all kind of act. Just some of us are on stage, and some of us aren't.
Some of us get paid for it, some of us don't. So as I said before, we ask our guests for some Soho memory songs, and Conrad chose Buddy Holly and Rave On. We're going to play The Clash now and Train in Vain. Why did you choose this one?
Because it's just a time in my life that I'd left London for about 3 weeks and then came back, and I heard the song on the way back into London, and then was coming up to meet my friends in Soho, and I fell in love with this song, and I had a really nice evening.
So it's a lovely memory. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Let's have a little listen. Listen to BB Does Soho on Soho Radio, SohoRadioLondon.com. We have an app. Go to the App Store and search for Soho Radio London. I like saying London, like the man who announced we got the Olympics. Where is he now? I hope he's well. I hope he's happy. I'm in the studio with Conrad Gamble, poet and curator of this brilliant book called For the Love of London. And you must go get it because it is lovely and interesting and just reveals so much about this city that I love, which spells love, listeners. Conrad Gamble, you've got a middle name?
Michael Marcel.
I mean, you just win, don't you? Michael
Marcel's a really funny one. It's a really like it's such a barometer about how cultured my friends are because half of them go like, "Oh, Marcel, like Marcel Jean, Marcel Marcel, Marcel Proust, whatever." I'm like, "Oh, you're that kind of friend." And the other half go, "Oh, Marcel, the monkey from Friends." I'm like, "Oh, you're that kind of friend."
Can we be
such
both?
Like straight down the line? Like, you can be both, definitely. Like, yeah, I didn't fucking know either way.
Why are you named Marcel then? Is there a Marcel in the family?
No, my mum's. Michelle,
the lovely Michelle.
Lovely Michelle. She's a designer, an artist. She you know, is a fan of
The Monkey and Friends.
yeah. She was ahead of her time.
I miss that monkey. What's the best gig you've seen in Soho?
Tim Arnold, Grant Gillespie, who's also in the book, and Tony told me to go and see a gig that Tim Arnold, Save Soho, I'm sure you know it, yeah, was putting on, and it was a Save Soho gig, and I had a lovely evening with Grant, and he was brilliant, and, you know, it's not only a great cause, but it was a wonderful evening.
Oh, how brilliant. Friend of the show, Tim Arnold, who was my Soho guest last month. He's gorgeous, isn't he? He's fantastic, very talented. His new album's beautiful, really lovely. Okay. If money and time were no object, I'm going to give you a tenner to put towards this. How do you spend your ideal Soho day and night or weekend?
If money was no object, I'd buy everyone a pint and, like, let's have a party. Like, like, you just walk around and you see things and you go here, there and everywhere. Because, but what would be my ideal? Friends in the middle of town, have a lovely lunch, have a lovely evening.
Where would you go for food?
Bar Bruno, because I've not been there yet.
Yeah, we totally got to go there. And you know what I've never done there? I've never had pudding there.
Not even black pudding?
Oh, here's a question, everyone, in the studio. My niece Ellie, my niece Billy Ellie, but no, I've got lots of nieces. Ellie's lovely as well, and Lois, and Sophia, and Arthur, and Edison, nephews. I just need to name everyone, otherwise I'll get in trouble. But Billy, or who I'm now calling Bully, because she calls me Auntie Booby or Uncle Beebe, was talking about black pudding. And I was saying, I love black pudding. And then I said to her, have you ever had white pudding? And she'd never had it. What's in white pudding? What's the difference between white pudding and black pudding? Is it just blood content?
Ooh.
Oats?
Yeah.
Oats?
It's got oats in it, yeah.
Just oats?
It's an Irish thing, yeah.
Are you Irish?
Yeah, half.
So am I. Which half of you?
My mum's side.
No, mine's my left side. No, I'm half Irish. Look, this is Conrad's hour, for God's sake.
Sorry, I'm
white
Irish
pudding?
Too.
Are you? Oh, look at us. We're all so cosmopolitan. Luke? No, Irish. Get out. Bye, Rach. Scottish. Get out. Did you just swear at me? She's unbelievable. The grief I get from her. I'm getting her sacked. I am. I'm going to get her sacked. So what was I saying? White pudding. Bar Bruno, white pudding. No, so I've never had, like, to me, if they don't have it on the menu, we're going to make sure Bella, lady does, apple crumble and custard.
I'm up for it.
Yeah. Spotted dick?
it seems like a lot on the plate, but yeah.
It's a big place. Let me see. What's been your most memorable night out in Soho?
Last night, to be honest.
What time did you get home, Conrad Gamble?
I didn't go home. I went to some friends. Yeah.
That's so naughty.
Yeah.
Are these the Marcel A or Marcel B friends?
There was a range.
Yeah.
The friends wasn't playing, so I couldn't do the barometer.
No.
But yeah, no, last night, I mean, having the book come to fruition, having the people come along, it was a great do.
Really, really lovely event. Your suit was nice.
Thank you.
It's all right. How would we describe it? Because I'm going, it's like a kind of a brightish blue, but not bright blue. Cobble? Is that a colour? Is that a word?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's a blue suit that's that sort of looks more expensive than it is.
Where do you stand on the waistcoat, on the three-piece?
it's, you know, each their own.
So you hate it as well. I hate it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a pocket watch to put in.
I'm going to make you one. I'm going to knit you one. Okay, if you, what's your strongest Soho memory?
Yeah, that what I said earlier, my dad taking me to Ed's when I was six before going to watch Buddy Holly. I'll never forget that.
Who was in, my mate Pete Gallagher, I think, was in Buddy Holly at one point. I wonder if he was in then. I love a musical. We're going to do a Soho radio musical. I'm writing it. If you were mayor of Soho, what would you do or change?
Definitely the development and just keep the independent shops. You know, it's madness. It's, you know, there's a, it should be kept as a heritage site. There's a reason why, whether it's Portobello or Brick Lane or Soho, the reason why people come to these places because of the independent spirit and what these people provide and, you know, and the community that happens. So if you bring in people just for higher rent, then what the fuck?
What are you doing?
Like, what? Why were they there in the first place? Why are people visiting? So stopping that for a start.
Well, it's a really great point. So the reason people coming has been taken away. Oh,
right,
Starbucks,
right. So yeah, Phil Ryan's in the book. Who's, I don't know if you know Phil, who he's set up the Big Issue, and he talks about Denmark Street, and he's totally mad. Like, you know, this is why people have come to these places. Mm. So why take that away?
It's a tin pan alley that now is, God knows what they're doing to it. I don't know. Why don't people that make the decisions or put this stuff in place see any of this? Why does that never get
brown
seen?
Brown paper packages in the back of their trousers.
Life is like that, isn't it?
Sadly.
I totally would love a brown paper package in the back of my trousers. I'd like some trousers to put it in. Sum up Soho in three words, please, Corinne Gamble.
Dirty beating heart.
There's rarely a round of applause in this studio, but that's really gorgeous. So a reminder, Conrad's gorgeous book, For the Love of London, is out March 9th, published by Cassell Octopus. Am I pronouncing Cassell right?
I don't know.
Okay, yeah. Cassell Octopus, please go to 4-the-love.com. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
The book's going to be a huge success. I really hope it is. Please introduce your final Soho Memory song and tell us why you've chosen this one.
I've learned to love this song recently, partly because he's passed recently, but also the remix of it is wonderful and it makes me happy. And let's enjoy it.
And it's David Bowie. Thank you.
Just let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere.
Angel,
look at that sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young. Opening doors and pulling some strings.
Angel,
in walk luck and you looked in time. Never look back, walk tall, act fine.
I'll stick with you, baby, for 1,000 years. Nothing's gonna touch you in these golden years.
Does Soho. With BB Lynch.
Maybe
Then Ellie, what happened?
Rachel, that's what happened.
Rachel, oh Soho Radio. I was just putting some lip gloss on, getting ready. Hang on a sec, I just put my headphones on. I was just putting some lip gloss on, and then we were chatting. What were we talking about? Men, life, Soho Radio, and then it went dead. How am I working with you two today? What's going on?
Bring Nick back.
Who's no? Ellie's lovely. Who's the drunk in the office? Apart from me, I thought you were drunk. Are we back on air? Am I on air? Are you sure I'm on air? Right, I'm going to start talking, for God's sake. That was, hey, welcome back to second hour of Bebe Does So. That was Hanging on a String, Loose Ends, takes me right back. And I need to say hello to Juliet in Seattle. I think it's stupid o'clock in the morning there. You better be listening, lady. So yeah, welcome back to the second hour of Bebe Does Soho. I'm Bebe Lynch and you're listening to Soho Radio, sohoradiolondon.com. We have an app, go to the app store and search for Soho Radio London. Coming to you from our beautifully bijou former coffee bar and studio on Great Wimble Street. You have to pop down because we've had a refurb and it looks so beautiful and woody. I love the word woody. And it's all and it's lovely and woody and it smells gorgeous and it looks amazing. And come in and say hello and give us a little wave. And oh, girls, it's my birthday on Saturday. I'm not sure if I mentioned it. And so come, you've got about an hour to give me a present. Come down and say hello. If you're too shy to say hi, tweet us at Soho Radio or at BB Lynch. We would love to hear from you. So the brilliant Conrad Gamble just entertained us with tales of his Soho. You must go and get that book, For the Love of London. It's really beautiful. And in a few minutes, novelist Matthew Blackstad will be here to talk Sock Puppet, his new novel, Trump and Abusing Pigs. Please keep listening. But first, ladies and gents, oh, I've got a story about this. I'll tell you in a minute. Ellie, yeah. Can we play Blondie and Fun, please?
True, you're too good to be true. You're my heart.
Blondie and fun. So I saw Debbie Harry and Chris Stein the other day in the BBC soft area. I don't want to talk about it. Guess what? My final guest is here. Welcome to Soho Radio. Novelist.
Uh-huh.
Matthew Blackstad. I've got such a problem with your name.
Yeah, it's a funny one.
I want to say...
Sorry.
Well, your apologies accepted.
Thank you.
I want to say Blackstad. Blackstead.
Yeah, Blackstead. So it's a Norwegian name, which
Norwegian
is why...
Norwegian isn't my first
language.
It's
black without a C, which is always impossible.
Yeah, it's
and
impossible.
I once met a Norwegian person at a wedding, and he actually told me how to pronounce my name, and it's something like Blusted.
Oh,
I don't think I've got the vowels to be
I'm
able to say
I'm sorry to any Norwegians listening, because
yeah, I
just swore
on behalf of our entire nation.
In Northern European.
Yeah.
Are we a nation still, Matt?
What are
we,
are we just floating off
what
into
are
the
we,
sea?
Matt? Do I appear drunk?
You're coping remarkably well. I think coping is the key skill.
that's my whole career has been right. based on that. So me and Matt were having a row on Twitter.
Oh, we were, weren't we?
Yeah, I won, everyone.
Yeah.
And then we started talking about his brilliant book. And he said to me, it's about politics and people being shitty to each other on the internet. I went, oh, you're booked. come in. So tell us about Sock Puppet.
It's about politics and people being shitty to each other on the internet.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, no. See you later. I guess you'd call it a thriller.
Yeah.
Because it's a bit of a page turner. But what I really want to do is write a book about the way people really act online, which is not always very nice. Mm. And also just think about the way that interacts with people like politicians and business people and all these people who are trying to kind of really make a difference to the world, and how just small things that happen online, dumb things that happen online, can sometimes completely disrupt their lives.
That is really interesting, because obviously when I mean, none of you remember me when I had a career, but when I had a career, I would write and people would read it. It was incredible. And that changed when things went online, and the below the line comments actually is a terrifying world to go into. And I didn't know how terrifying the first time I ventured.
I've never done it.
Yeah, I would never do it now. People read them to me. Oh. I get people send me, if you've read this, thank you so much for bringing that to my life. Yeah, you know, yeah, no, yeah. Don't do it. But you never, so you think of it in terms of writers or performers, but not politicians.
Right.
And that must really affect.
Right. Although, I mean, you know, you've only got to look at what's going on in America at the moment. I mean, my book kind of turns out to be more topical than I thought it was going to be.
Yes.
Really, because it's all about a female politician who's, you know, she's a human being, right? Yeah. She's basically decent, but she's done some bad things. And she's ambitious and she wants to make a difference. But it's just this one solitary voice. It's actually a chatbot. It's just a fake voice online that starts dissing her online, and everything just crumbles for her. And, you know, I finished writing that like 2 years ago. But now you look at what's happened to Hillary Clinton and all these kids on Reddit kind of making up stories about her running child pornography cults in the basement of pizza restaurants and God knows what. You know,
who hasn't done that? We've got to make a living, right?
It's hard to believe, you know, in the age of fake news, that a lot of randoms on the internet didn't win Trump the election. And that's pretty serious.
Yeah, the whole fake news thing is so interesting, isn't it? And how the organisations kind of have to now take responsibility that they are legit publishers.
Right.
You know, they're actually a platform. But this was always going to happen.
Right.
If you give people a voice, and part of me, obviously the liberal in me, wants to say everyone should have a voice, but the person who's...
Right.
The person who used to make money out of writing and having a voice goes, shut up your voice.
Yeah, you know, and every medium that's ever been introduced into the world, we've always taken quite a few years before we work out actually how you behave on it. I mean, when Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone, he thought it was going to be to broadcast to lots of different people, and actually we decided the better thing for it was one-to-one, you know, radio the other way around. So I think it takes time for new channels to settle in, and we've got this crazy culture at the moment which has definitely been fueled by the way people behave online, and I think we're just learning. We're like toddlers out there, you know. And actually, I mean, one of the things in my day job, I do a lot of work around psychology and human behaviour research. Yeah, and so one of the things that you see a lot of at the moment is research into the difference between the way people think when they're online versus the way they think when they're offline.
Yeah.
And I could sum it up in one word: we're more stupid. we react more, because it's so fluid, we react more quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. We take in, the impression we get of something we're looking at online happens in about a millisecond. And there's some amazing things, like if you give someone a web page that's all beautifully designed, they just like take it in really quickly and form an opinion. If you make it really ugly and you change all the font to Comic Sans, suddenly they start getting more information off it. And so I think partly this is just about us learning to to think a bit more and to respond, not just with our knee-jerk response, but actually with our brains.
And our emotion and our brains learning.
Right.
But it is really interesting, because I'm a fiery little thing anyway. I'm nearly 5'2". And and Twitter is not a place I should be. Do you know what I mean? I just shouldn't be on Twitter.
Oh, no, you should be. You were born for it.
We're going to talk about, because we've got a competition, it's really exciting. The throw out, I've got a story to tell you that I'm not even sure. Producer Ellie to my right, are you genned up on broadcast law in terms of libel and slander?
She's looking really
okay, so she's Googling one. Libel, Googling slander. Okay, I'm sure I shouldn't say what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it. I don't go here. I've got nothing to lose, literally nothing to lose. It's my birthday on Saturday though. So what was I saying? The book's amazing. Where we're all at and all the things we're doing. Sorry, I'm so full of cold. And let me read some reviews from the book, because I've got so captured in this book. And I sent Matt a text, and I don't usually do this, but I just said, I'm really sorry I haven't finished the book yet. It's so brilliant. And the reason I haven't finished is because my life has gone to hell. And I just have had to be concentrating on hell. But it's genuinely a brilliant, brilliant book.
Thank you.
Some of the reviews. So fascinating and hair-raising, The Guardian. This is a great FT quote. Embedded with techie jargon and shards of wit, Sock Puppet takes a snapshot of our age of online shaming and oversharing and runs it through a skewed, feverish filter. The result is compelling. It is totally compelling. And it's a bit too close to the... It's freaked me right out. I'm not saying I've got anything to hide.
But
Soho.
But whatever we've all done online, it's all out there.
Is it?
It's never going away. You know, I know that's the thing. I mean, it all feels so natural and normal, and it rewards us so quickly, doesn't it? You know, if you put something out that people like and they respond to it, you feel so good about yourself. And that's fueling your urge to put more stuff out there. But nobody really knows where that stuff's going to go or how people are going to use it in the future.
It's totally going to be what gets me. Right. It's totally going to be the thing that gets me. So when you say that the word that sums up how people are now online as opposed to kind of real life and it's stupid, I think ego.
Oh, yeah.
Too, because some of the stuff you see and read and the whole fake book thing that we like put out these different lives And that whole thing about how tone can't be read. I mean, I remember writing something recently and going, I'm going to kill someone. And someone went, oh, you're in a bad mood. I went, no, it's actually me just being hilarious. But it was like, you know, but even that's something innocuous as that. The back cover declares nothing is private. No one is safe. Do you think we are all doomed to be exposed? Do you think it's going to...
I think we're going to have to start thinking a bit differently about what privacy means. I mean, this whole idea that we're entitled to be behind walls and people won't know what we do there is quite a modern invention. You know, we used to live cheek by jowl just a few hundred years ago, and everyone knew what everyone else was doing. Yeah. Or in a lot of societies that are less technologically developed, that still remains the case. So I think what's happening at the moment is our notion of what private is shifting. I think you're right. We create public identities that are the thing we want people to see about us, and I think we're going to get smarter about doing that and curating the version of our lives people see. One of the characters in the book talks about the fact that in the future, the biggest luxury you can have is going to be privacy. And to be able to buy the right to hide behind a screen of an online identity that's not quite who you really are, that's for the celebrities maybe and the tycoons.
So what can we do now then for stuff that we've got that's out there? There's nothing, is there?
Well, I mean, I'm the worst person to ask because I'm absolutely useless. I was out at karaoke last night,
yes.
As you know.
And
which is why I'm a bit gravelly this morning.
Well, no, you sound fabulous. What was your song of choice?
The worst choice was definitely Total Eclipse of the Heart. That was unwise, not in my range or gender in any way. I think I killed Empire State of Mind, though.
Do you
absolutely
think you did? Do we have anyone we can ring to find out?
No, absolutely not. But anyway, the reason I mentioned this is because in order to get onto the Wi-Fi in that club, I allowed them to post where I was on Facebook. And I've never had so many responses from people. I had a lot of song requests coming through. But that was a really dumb thing to do because I spent my whole life trying to protect my Facebook data set from every other data set and not let people open it up. But
and
as soon as you do
it.
That, you know, they can scrape around, they can find out everything about you and sell that on.
The book is so amazing. Hello, I'm waving. The book is so amazing. The characters are so... I mean, I'm going to blow more smoke up your WhatsApp later because it is a brilliant, brilliant book. I know you do. Bonnie. But can I call you Bonnie the rest of the show? Whatever. But yes, to say the premise. So Sick Girl is a creation of Danny. And it's such... It, these ideas are so clever. So Sick Girl just basically collates just all this information that's around the net online and makes a language out of it, right. Just makes dialogue out of it, or not even dialogue, just monologue out of it, and posts or proffers as we would just like tweet. But then starts making sense, and well, always made sense, but then starts making pertinent sense.
A dangerous kind of sense
about something that's going on, about a kind of new setup that's a digital citizen database that this the MP, Bethany, is behind. How did your... does this exist? Have you created Sick Girl? Or how did your head come up with that? Because that's incredible.
It totally does exist. And I mean, one of the number of things that I wrote in the book that sort of since come true in the real world is there was a chatbot that Microsoft created called Tay. And all that did is it went out and said, "Hello, I'm Tay." And it was supposed to appeal to teenage girls, and they were supposed to come in and sort of chat. So it was supposed to learn all about all the things that they were interested in. Of course, all that happened is a bunch of trolls started swearing at it and saying appalling things, just because the way that Tay learned to speak was just by exactly what Sick Girl does, the chatbot in the book, which is just listening to what other people are saying and kind of processing that and spewing it out. So basically these trolls started goading Tay to say the most appalling things, and she ended up endorsing Trump and
boyfriend Trump
and speaking ghetto slang about going out and scoring some drugs and the teenage girls of the internet were no doubt delighted by this. So yeah, that's a technology that definitely exists. And also I think one of the things I was thinking when I wrote the book is the internet kind of has its own weird intelligence and personality, or many, many personalities. And it's the sort of joined up aggregate voice of all the different things that people are and the things that people say and the things that people do. And we experience that when we go online. You know, there's this different experience that we have of other people, which is much more multiple. It's like we're seeing everyone at once. And the way that something like Google works is to have the power to pull all that sort of information together and all the things that people say and turn it into a kind of logic. You know, Google didn't learn to speak, to translate English to French by anyone giving it a dictionary. It just looks at lots of texts that are translated from each other and just learns from that. It just pulls all the information together.
It genuinely blows my mind. And it's, you know, I remember my first email account. Do you know what I mean? That was a big deal. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, you know, and I can't get my head around this. There's a great quote that you get in the book, and I'm obviously not going to be able to find it. I'm using Jem's laptop, because no one's still know. My birthday is Saturday, if anyone wants to buy me a MacBook. And there's a great quote that you quote in the book, that every sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. I still feel that way about faxing.
Yeah.
I mean, genuinely, I think it's magic.
Arthur C. Clarke, the great sci-fi writer and scientist who wrote that, you know, he said that back in the 60s, I think. And God, if it's ever been true, it's true now, isn't it? I mean, I understand a lot about technology, but every time I use my smartphone, I think, how does that work? How can we all have these in our hands?
It kind of makes, to be honest, I mean, I don't like people, you know that. And I think I would just rather be me and my phone. I think we'd be very happy together.
It's going that way.
So, we'll talk about Sambot, because that's where we're going to make our money, Matt. Well, seriously, me and you, 50% for me, because I've, you know, come up with the idea. Or you know, talking about the idea. Let's play a track. Ellie, this is a song about you. It's called Old Girl. Oh, I hope it's nice lyrics. I haven't heard the lyrics properly for a while. Just play it. Thanks. You're listening to BB Does Soho on Soho Radio, sohoradiolondon.com. We have an app. Go to the app store and search for Soho. Soho. Is that how you say Soho? Soho. And that was Oh Girl by the Chai Lights. Oh, so you know Chai Latte? I like to call it Tai Chi. It's hilarious when I do that. And I'd only had Chai Latte recently. More gold from me there. Anyway, so right, before we go on, Matt?
I'm still here.
Okay. That sounded like a threat, Matt. before we go on, I need to tell you that Matt and Hodder, the publisher, are giving having a giveaway competition for Sock Puppet. And what do people win, please?
They win a copy of the beautiful paperback with its terrifying wraparound glassy-eyed pig mask.
Yes, hard
to miss, which is nice. Also,
good design. Great design.
Yeah, I love it. Oh, absolutely love it. It's kind of, it doesn't look like anything else. But I just walked into Waterstones on my way up here and looked it on the table.
Oh, and so, did you?
Such a thrill. And it just stares out at you.
Honestly.
Forget the Jonathan Franzens. You know,
that must be an incredible thrill. Do you kind of just shoo aside the other books, like deliberately throw them on the floor?
And put all yours? Every writer goes into the shop, and if the book isn't facing cover out, they turn it around. You look at the books facing cover out, that's not the shop that did that. That's all those writers constantly going in there and turning their books around.
Jumping into the window, just doing a little pyramid on them.
But they've done it already, so that was quite nice.
That's amazing.
Exactly. So you can win one of those, and I think there's three to give away. Also, the inevitable Percy Pigs, because they accompany all sock puppet giveaways.
Yeah.
And also some very exciting Women in Tech Top Trump cards, which we've created to go with the book, and it's fellow books.
Yes.
So it's Sock Puppet is one of a series. It's the first of a series of books that I'm writing. The second one comes out in July this year and is called Lucky Ghost.
Have you written it?
Yeah. Actually, I'm going to hand in the final manuscript this afternoon.
Ooh.
Dotting the I's and crossing the T's right now. Yeah, if you've...
I could correct
you. If you want to read 113,000 words before 5 p.m.
I would love to.
I'd appreciate it. So, it's a series of books and they're all separate stories, but they're based around this idea that there was this big political radical figure who was also a pioneer of computers in the mid-20th century called Elise Martingale. And I've tried to make her as real as I can because she's become this kind of folk hero by the time Sock Puppet takes place. Although later on I'm going to write a little bit about her life. While she
and Bethany's her granddaughter.
And Bethany, who's the politician in the book, is her granddaughter. So everything kind of connects together in this world built around her. So I'm trying to build a sort of mythos of Elise Martingale and the influence she's had on our world. We've created these cards, so they're quite fun. You can play Top Trumps with them.
Top Trumps. Oh, Donald Trump. You love him, don't you?
He's people keep saying he must be a gift to writers and comedians, but I actually think you just look at that and you think, what else can I do?
When that's actually in the world,
right? Exactly. But it's weird. I mean, I was writing Lucky Ghost all the way, literally from the second book, all the way from the 1st of January last year to, I think it was something like the 20th of December. That was writing the first draft of the book. And as I wrote it, more and more stuff crept in. I mean, Trump gets a name check in it. It's set 10 years in the future, so I have a little view on what might happen to him in there.
Oh
yeah.
How's no his teasers. Hair?
No
How's
teasers.
His hair?
Yeah, that will probably be the only thing that survives after the rest of him is decayed.
Cockroaches.
Exactly. That'll still be there 300 years in the future when the world is ash. But also, you know, everything else, Brexit, the immigration crisis, the Syrian crisis, all of that. And it's very hard to write a book at the moment without that stuff just bleeding in.
Well, this is what I keep asking anyone creative, everyone that's creative that comes in here, but exactly that, because it's such a kind of crazy imploding time. Does it paralyze or does it inspire? You know, and I guess it's a bit of both.
I think it's both. And I think the thing about writing fiction, which is so amazing, and I've come to it relatively late in life. Sock Puppet's my first book, and I'm not as young as I was when I set out on my initial career. And one of the amazing things about it is it's constantly going to surprise you. You know, when you sit down and just start writing a story, you think you know where it's going to go. You think you know what the characters will do. But a character like Danny in Sock Puppet, she shoots from the hip. She's pretty volatile. She will just do things that I had no idea
was
going to do. I'm not sure
we've
met them, but I've predicted a lot of things in the book, so maybe that was you. So I think you just become a bit of a channel for everything that's going on around you. So I don't think you can avoid being stimulated by a situation that's as crazy as the one we're in at the moment.
It actually scares me. Let's talk about the competition, then we'll have a track, and then we'll come in about more about the book. So the competition will be left open for a week.
Yep.
So our lovely Mixcloud listeners and listen againers can enter too, and Hodder will contact the winner. So
yep,
so, so how do we do it? So what do people have to do?
They need to tweet me.
Yes.
And I'm at Matt Black, which again does not have a C because of my strange Norwegian name. So it's MATTBLAK. You can tweet BB as well. I'm sure you wouldn't mind getting them.
Love it.
And tell us the worst disaster you ever caused by something that you did online.
Shall I tell you mine?
Oh, please do.
So, but you know, it's my phone.
That's happening already.
That's the police saying. So I ended up at a police station because of some tweets. Oh,
how?
My
this,
God.
This is like the book.
This is so brilliant. So, I don't think I've ever said this story because I'm not sure if legally I'm allowed to. But anyway, so a friend of mine. I've really got to be careful. A friend of mine was going through a very tricky domestic situation, and the cause of this domestic situation was doing more and more that was, I think, really immoral and hideous. Lots of gaslighting, lots of nastiness. And my friend told me, gave me an update, and because I am, you know, mouthy, I tweeted about it. I didn't name the person and I didn't at mention the person. So in my kind of naive way, I genuinely thought that was safe. I thought that was okay.
Subtweeting.
Yeah, about someone who was also blocked. So actually this person had no way, except of course this person was obsessed with me, and why wouldn't she be? But she was obsessed with me, and she so I'm watching X Factor one night. So I've done all these tweets in the morning, a flurry of tweets, and genuinely not identified this person. I really haven't identified this person because I'm canny enough to know to do that.
Sure.
And I'm watching X Factor because I'm not that canny. I'm watching X Factor, and I missed a call. And then I checked my phone later on. It was the police.
No.
Miss Lynch, blah, 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 blah. And I genuinely thought someone was, you know, was winding me up. And then I rang it. I rang the number, and it was the police. And this person had gone to the police about my tweets, saying they'd caused her distress. So she, a blocked person who I hadn't named or at mentioned, has gone to the trouble of searching out my tweets via Google, I guess.
Wow.
And going to the police about them. And apparently there's something called the jigsaw effect. See, I don't know if the policeman was pulling mine. Okay, so I don't know if it was just a kind of okay. I can't be bothered with this stuff, but this other woman who is a bit hysterical is kind of, you know, is going to be causing all kinds of shit if I don't seem to be taking this seriously. And then I remember saying to my beau at the time, "Is this true? Does this exist? Does the jigsaw effect exist? So if someone, if I tweeted about you, Ellie, but didn't name you or anything." I said this beautiful honey colour, honey blonde colour girl, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you were like, oh, that's me she's talking about. So if you can identify you and it causes you distress, apparently you can go after my ass. But then it's something like, Piers Morgan and Trump, who people actually actively at tweet, you know, and at mention and tell them exactly what they think of them, drop the C-bomb all over their faces. Do you know what I mean? So I don't know if the policeman was pulling mine, but it was actually, so I said to the policeman, and the funniest thing was, He said to me, you know, this is very serious. And I think I giggled. And he went, I could have you in a cell in handcuffs. And then I really laughed. Oh, officer. And then
it's not every night that X Factor leads to that kind of conversation,
well,
is it?
Pretty much every night, but not every, right, well, you know, every other night. And then he blushed. I was like, brilliant. Made the Rosa blush. It really made me laugh. And all I had in my ears was when I left the flat, my brother said, I'm not going to say the F word. Can I say it? I mime it. John went, said the last thing he said, as I was leaving the flat to go to the police station, he said, don't fuck a policeman. I didn't. I wouldn't. How hilarious.
At least not in uniform.
Especially in uniform. But anyway, hilarious. Anyway, I've gone off the story. But anyway, the point is, I didn't even know that existed. I didn't know jigsawing was a thing. And I still don't know if it's a thing.
No, I haven't heard that term. But yeah, I think it's definitely a thing.
Oh, do you?
Oh, yeah.
Do you?
And also, I mean, people, there's definitely court action going. I mean, Jack Munro, the food blogger, is in court at the moment over something Katie Hopkins said, which Katie Hopkins claims said by mistake. Right. This stuff is very real, and again, it's back to what we were saying earlier on. Stuff you say online has consequences.
But then why are the and it didn't. It did really shock me. But there was, I then started getting abuse from her followers from Facebook. So
really?
She'd mentioned it and named me. And I said to the Rosa, I said, hang on, so how's that okay?
Well, because she's talking about something you really did, isn't
she? Oh, is she? Is she? I wish I'd known you then.
I'm not a lawyer.
Are you not? But anyway, kids. So and then I said to the police, and the PS to this is, I emailed him because we emailed him.
Where is this going?
It wasn't about her. I've got truth Tourette's, as I've said to you, I've got truth Tourette's. And so
truth Tourette's.
And I emailed him. So I said, can I tweet about this? The reason being, I think it's really interesting because I don't think people on Twitter know this. I think people on Twitter would not know that you could, you know, if you don't name or mention, you're not safe. And he got very strict with me and said no.
Really?
Yeah.
Because it was tweeting about
what was going on. Yeah. No, nothing got, you know, no, it wasn't, you know, I did about three tweets saying that I thought what someone was doing was shitty. There's not worse on Twitter every single minute of the day.
Yeah, but it's who's at the other end of the comments you're making, isn't
and what
it?
Kind of person that difference. Is. Exactly. Yeah. Let's see what happens to me now. Let's see if there's a police car outside when we leave. Hello.
So hey, you've probably won the competition now.
I've won the competition, but I'm willing to share. But so what's the worst thing you've done that's caused trouble to you or someone else or anything, you know, based on whatever you said or done online? That is hilarious. There's also that thing, and this is what happens when you write as well, of online, we'll go to a song in a minute, that you really, I love this song. You kind of just, you're doing it in your own world. So you think it's safe. You think you're in your bedroom tweeting. Do you know what I mean? You don't realise it's there.
Yeah, exactly.
we're just Googling up some legal information for me.
Yeah, but Google is not a legal professional either.
You need to write that so you can get arrested.
I can arrest her. I could get arrested. What, just now?
No.
God.
It's a cab that just pulled up.
It's not a police car.
I've
been in the police car quite a few times in my life.
Do you want to tell us some more?
No. Have you ever been in a police car?
Do you know, I haven't.
Oh,
I know, I haven't lived, have I?
Luke?
No.
No?
Not yet.
Producer Ellie?
Yeah, my friend's boyfriend's a policeman.
Oh, right, so that's not the same, is it? That's just wasting taxpayers' money. Let's play a song. So tweet us. And I'm going to have a little look at my my Twitter now, assuming it's still up. Ellie,
yeah.
Are you looking at porn? Oh, can you please play the track that I'd like you to play?
Grazing in the Grass.
Raising in the grass is a game.
just taken my glasses off and I really can't see anything. So I was just updating everyone everything that's going on in my life. That was, hang on, someone say something. Oh, yeah, I'm BB Lynch. This is BB Does Soho on Soho Radio. And that was The Friends of Distinction and Grazing in the Grass. Grass? Grass? Grass. Where are you from, Matt?
I'm a Londoner.
Yeah.
I spent a few years of my life out of London, but since my early 20s, always London and Soho for some of the time.
Yeah, I know. You lived on Frith.
I did, yeah, in a really disgusting two-room flat that
it
definitely used
matter.
To be something else.
Oh, fantastic.
One-way glass on the door.
Seriously?
Yeah.
A dentist, do you think?
Probably. Presumably.
What was it like living in Soho?
I loved it. It's the only place I've lived where everyone just spills their lives out onto the street. I mean, I was talking earlier on about that idea that, you know, nobody's really got privacy anymore. I mean, my God, that's true in Soho. I mean, people don't have back gardens here, do they?
No.
You know,
no.
This country, we you know, we love a front door, you know, we love to lock it. We love a little sort of private spaces. But when you're as cheap by jowl as you are somewhere like Soho, you just live life elbow to elbow with everyone
and
else.
And it's so weird when there's real life here, because there's a primary school next to Soho Radio. And it's still, and I'm like, because my mum's family lived on Neil Street, above Frank's Cafe.
Oh, yeah.
So they went to school around here. And even that blows my mind.
Yeah.
You know, so,
yeah.
But you know,
that this is your kind of, you know, your nursery.
Yeah, your life. Yeah. This is your life. It's amazing. Frith Street. Oh, I'd still love to live in Soho. You know, we were talking earlier about, Ellie, do you want to read some tweets out? Get some tweets up. And then I didn't talk to Matt about this. Dante is sending me, God. Dan on Twitter, I think, is in love with me.
It's one of your regulars.
I'm not joking. I genuinely think he's going to propose, and I think it could be today. Let's see.
By Twitter.
Let's see what he tweets now. Excuse me?
Do you want me to read some out?
Read some tweets out. See what's happening.
Can you hear me?
I can. No, not really, no. Can you get in front of a mic?
I'm going to just...
Oh, there she is.
Hello there.
Hi there.
Right, so we've got Dante saying, laughing at your Twitter story, you naughty girl.
Thank you, Dan.
We've got Marco saying, can someone help Soho Radio?
Mm.
Oh, nice.
Why? What's
Thank
happened?
You, Marco. I don't know.
What's happened?
Then we got, this is very difficult to be fair. Every day I spend online is a bit of a disaster.
Is that Dan again?
Yeah.
What's he talking about? What's he done wrong?
I don't know. He's just...
He is trouble.
Yeah. And that's it, really.
Anyone mention my birthday?
No.
Well,
sorry.
Okay. Interesting. Thanks, Ellie. Matt, so you know we were saying about how... you know, people just kind of say what they want to say and, you know, kind of go for it.
Right.
What can the platforms do? So, for instance, the whole Liliana thing that kicked off last week.
Oh, yeah.
And it was so hideous. And I don't know if people know the story, but there was a row started between Lily Allen and someone about pensioners. I don't know what the top of this tale was, because I didn't join it at that stage. And then I only joined it when it started kind of going all over the place. And someone, as a response, said to her, oh, you know, you must be insane. You must have mental health issues or something. She said, well, actually, I do. And said that she was depressed and had post-traumatic stress disorder because of her stillbirth. And she gave really graphic description of what happened when her baby died. And it was genuinely upsetting, like really upsetting.
Yeah, yeah.
And someone responded to someone obviously still in pain about something, and such a raw exposure, exposing of their life and what they've been through, and most probably the worst moment of her life that she ever had and ever will have. Talking about that, and someone had came in and replied, "Oh, the kid must have knew what a horrible mum you'd be," and decided to die in its own terms.
Yeah, I saw that. And where I came into that was I saw someone tweeting, you know, she's a celebrity. And she ought to know that you just need to develop a thick skin.
Oh my God.
That just said so much to me, because I think people just feel that when they see the lives, and sometimes very personal things about these public figures on something like Twitter, they feel they own it. No?
Yeah.
They genuinely feel they own it. And so they can basically behave any way they want. In a way that if they were in a building, you know, if they were in the same room with Lily Allen, they would crumble. You know, someone famous is near them, and yet, because she's packaged up into a little rectangular avatar, and they're not face to face with her, they just feel they can do what they like.
This is the whole thing about giving someone a voice, isn't it?
Right.
It's like, you know, but you know, free speech is free speech, but there's going to be a repercussion if someone's hurt by it.
Right. I think the thing that really bothers me is it's hard to see how that's going to change, because Twitter's not doing brilliantly financially. You hear a lot about it. What keeps them alive as a platform, what gives them the chance to sell advertising is people talking and people having conversations. And the more controversy there is and the more Trump says something crazy and the more people are abusive to someone like Lily Allen, the more traffic they get.
I get that, but also I know that one of the issues is people have that perception of Twitter, and so therefore more people might be joining if there wasn't that going on.
It's a ripple effect. I agree.
I don't understand how people could feel like, because you're exactly right. Who would ever say that to her face?
Right.
It would be, you know what? That bloke would be asking for her autograph.
And there are people, I can't remember her name, but there was a tech blogger who confronted one of the trolls that rose up in the horrible Gamergate thing that also gave birth to Milo Yiannopoulos, so thanks for that. And she did a fantastic interview where she sat down a guy who had been trolling her appallingly and talked to him. And he was just, biscuits just arrived. I should mention it. He couldn't explain it and could only tell her, you know, I'm a decent person. I don't know why I would do a thing like this. But he had no rationale, and I don't think there is one. And it's back to what I was saying earlier on. We respond with our lizard brain when we're online. The things we do aren't reasonable and they aren't rational.
So we, Sarah Galbrand, hello, lovely, and I posted a picture of us at the Women's March, and we were just like grinning away. And someone tweeted, someone I don't know, and just said, oh, she needs to go to a dentist. I have got hideous teeth. I know I've got hideous teeth. I don't know this man. What a thing to say. I mean, do you know what I mean?
Why start with the teeth?
Why start with that? There's everything else that you could have started.
That's not what I meant. That's literally not what I meant.
Matthew. But you know, you're just like, oh, right, really? So I, of course, went back and went, well, I'm so sorry I'm not as perfect as you. You know, I'm so sorry that I'm this hideous creature. But, you know, thank you so much for pointing it out, because you made me feel like shit. Thank you so much.
Well done.
Because it was a really horrible thing. Right. And it really upset me. And I know it's pathetic. I don't care about the person. That's not the point.
Right.
Tell me about, did you have sex with a pig?
Yeah, but only for research purposes.
Yeah. How was it?
It was all right. Messy. Yeah. So we're talking about David Cameron obliquely here, I believe.
Well, if you say so.
Right, allegedly we're talking about David Cameron. Yeah, this was another one of the crazy ways in which something I'd done in the book just kind of popped up in the real world. And it was actually just after we'd finalised the cover design, which is this scary pig mask. And the reason there's a pig mask on the cover of the book is that a bunch of anti-capitalist protesters start wearing a pig mask because of a political scandal called Piggate that crops up in the book. And literally the day after we'd signed off the cover art, a certain news story broke out about what David Cameron may or may not have done with his parliamentary privilege while he was a student at Oxford University. Before he was a member. And then, you know, I few days later, I saw a picture of anti-capitalist demonstrators in Manchester at the Tory conference wearing pig masks.
It's really extraordinary. It is odd. Why did you choose politics and online anyway to write about?
Well, so it's a bit about politics and it's a bit about people in tech who are, you know,
and it's
making
psychology.
Mints out of running online businesses. And yeah, exactly. But the thing that fascinates me, because I've worked in government a bit, I've worked for government departments, I've been in ministers' offices and sort of seen how they are. Oh yeah, really.
Because you do know these worlds brilliantly.
Yeah, and I think you have to, because people's perception of how government works from outside is not always right. And these are people. They're people who are normally motivated really positively.
Do you believe
politicians
that?
And business people. So I think so. I think people are ambitious, but I think you know, Silicon Valley billionaires and government ministers are all people who believe that they can change the world for the better, and how they get there is sometimes not necessarily, you know, very kind, and they may not be motivated very morally. They may be very ambitious, but fundamentally they're people who think they can change the world for the better. And I think that's a fascinating characteristic in a human being.
But is that just narcissism?
Yeah, there is definitely a form of narcissism. I mean, it's the old thing, isn't it? You know, nobody who thinks they could be prime minister should be prime minister by definition. It's the sort of Groucho principle.
And also if you think you're mad.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Maybe she's their president.
Yeah. I find it interesting. And my whole thing, because the homelessness in London, just I can't get my head beyond it, because I just think it's the shame of this country, and it's criminal, and it's hideous, and it's so upsetting. I saw four homeless men today on a 25-minute journey, and one was crying. And then when I walked from Piccadilly here, two more. That's not unusual, and it's just so upsetting, so horrible. And what kills me about anyone that seems to have the power to make any change, they don't live that. They don't know that. They can't feel that. And I'm not saying you have to be homeless to understand that it's so awful to be homeless. But there seems to be no, there seems to be a disconnect every single time. There just never seems to be, I don't know who these people are, because they don't seem to be, it's such a cliche to say, they don't seem to be in our world.
So I think one of the great...
Why aren't they seeing what we're seeing?
One of the great shames of the way that the political system works is that by the time you get to a place where you're powerful enough to make a difference, you're shielded from the world.
Exactly.
Because everywhere you go, you know, it's like people always say, the Queen thinks the world smells of fresh paint. You know? the version of the world you get when you're in authority is curated. You know, it's false. And the information that a government minister gets is put together in sort of big spreadsheets and you know, big options analysis papers that say you could do this or you could do this and the impact of this would be this. And the whole purpose of the civil service is to turn the world into a sort of logical shape so a minister can make a difference, and it's filtering.
But it should
that
be
reality.
Emotional. It should come from emotion, because that's when you would make a change.
And I think some of the best and some of the worst politicians are the ones who are most motivated by emotion and who keep that. I mean, say what you like about Trump. He knows what he feels. He knows what he believes. He has a route through somehow. This guy, you know, given his background and his wealth, he has an insight into what a lot of white working class people in America feel in a way that none of the political parties have been able to
it's
do.
It's extraordinary,
for the last few
isn't decades. It? I blame cheap drugs. I seriously don't know what the answer is, but I don't know why everyone's been.
He's got his finger on the pulse
somehow. Let's have I wrote this song. It's the Supremes. That one, the one I wrote. Just play it. Someday we'll be together, the Supremes. I'm Bebe Lynch. This is Soho Radio. I'm joined in the studio by novelist Matthew Black Stad.
Sure.
Before I ask you about, we're near the end of the interview. You had a nice time.
It's been fun.
Has it?
Yes.
Has it?
Yes. I've heard all sorts of things about you.
No, I bet you have. What, from me?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's no point. That's no good. Before I ask you about what it's like doing a debut novel, because I can imagine it's just thrilling, I have to quickly ask you. So you were a professional child actor.
I was. I know.
What were you in?
Oh, my God. A Hammer House of Horror called Growing Pains, in which I was possessed by the spirit of my dead half-brother. Yeah. I was scary. No, seriously. I got my best review yet, which is the Daily Telegraph said I was the next generation's Peter Cushing. And look at me now.
What was your dead half-brother called?
Christopher, I think.
Oh, that's
that might have been the actor, actually.
That's scary. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know, it's not scary. Okay.
How brilliant.
I know,
so
I know.
From what age to what
so
age?
So I think it was 9. I came home from school one day, and my mum said, you have a good day at school? And I said, yeah, this really nice man took me into the library and asked me lots of questions and took photographs of me.
Oh, so mummy rang the school.
pretty quickly. And it turned out it was someone from the BBC, and they were going around auditioning for a series about J.M. Barrie, who wrote Peter Pan. And it was a drama about the boys that he befriended, and it's a complicated relationship, in Kensington Gardens.
Yeah.
And they were trying to find boys who looked like these real boys, but also who they could age, you know, so you had 5 actors playing these boys of different ages. So it was purely a sort of Polaroid casting.
Aren't
they all? Just happened to look like some other people. And so you just, you know, when you're that age, you just walk into it and you think, fine, this is what I'm doing now. And then they rang up again and I got a few more parts. So I did sort of, pretty much one thing a year until I was about 16.
That's so brilliant.
Yeah. It was just random. Funny. I wasn't like a, you know, stage school brat or anything like that.
Did you yearn for Grange Hill?
I was a bit posh for that.
Well, there's a life lesson, isn't there? There's the one time where being posh has been a disadvantage. So the one time, I'd love to have been in Grange Hill.
Oh, God, yes.
I wanted to go to St Trinian's, like genuinely in real life wanted to go to St Trinian's.
Because it is a place.
Yeah, well, in here, in this little head it is. I have to just quickly say, because I'm going to say goodbye to everyone in a minute, but the book, I genuinely think it's brilliant.
Thank you.
I think you're a brilliant writer. And this isn't like a kind of impact line, but it really made me, because I love that you're writing. I think it's really clever and simple. I'm not kind of over descriptive. I don't like that kind of writing. And that you wrote this line, I just thought it's so simple, so effective, and so brilliant. Watched him lean on the podium like a club comic and survey the crowd. Instantly, you got it. Instantly. So honestly, I think this stuff's amazing.
Thank you.
Is it fun writing for you?
It's completely absorbing. I mean, it fills me with energy. And I can sit down at my desk at 8 in the morning and then I look outside the window and suddenly it's dark because I've been writing all day.
Aww.
And I didn't know. And I kind of walk into the world blinking like some kind of crazy shut-in who's been in a basement in Arkansas for 10 years, you know, because you just walk into another world. It's amazing.
Well, I wish you the best with the novel, because I think it's
thank you. It's
brilliant. So I need to say goodbye and thank my guests. Thank you, Conrad Gamble. Conrad's wonderful book, For the Love of London, is out March 9th, published by Cassell Octopus. For updates, go to for-the-love.com. Thank you, Matthew Blackstad. Matthew's brilliant novel, Sock Puppet, is out now on Hodder. For updates on all Matt's exciting projects, go to matthewblackstad.com and follow him on Twitter at @MattBlackNoC. Thank you, producer Ellie. Thank you, producer Luke. And most of all, thank you for listening and joining in. That's it from me, BB Lynch. Until next time, stay tuned to your wonderful Soho Radio. And I'll leave you with it's our song, Soho. It's Jackie Wilson, To Be Loved. The crack in his voice. Oh my God, I'm gone. Totally gone. Love you, Soho.
Someone to care, someone to share lonely hours and the moments of despair. To be loved, to be loved. Oh, what a feeling to be loved. Someone to kiss, someone to miss when you're away. To hear from me today. To be loved, to be loved, to be loved. Oh, oh, what a feeling to be loved. Some wish to be a king or a queen. Some wish for fortune and fame, but to be
truly, truly, truly loved is more than all of these things. Oh, oh, someone to kiss, someone to miss when you're away.